Britain and the US have welcomed China's pledge to stop funding coal projects abroad. President Xi Jinping made the announcement in his address at the United Nations General Assembly earlier this week. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson told the forum today that China is now placed to aim for tougher targets at home.
By the way, I want to thank very much President Xi of China for what he has just done to end China's international financing of coal. And I hope China will now go further and phase out the domestic use of coal as well. Wouldn't that be a great thing? Because the experience of the UK shows that it can be done.
For more on this, I'm joined from Oslo by Tom Woodruff, a fellow at the Asia Society Policy Institute who previously worked as a diplomatic advisor in the Paris Agreement negotiations. Welcome to RN Drive.
Thanks, Patricia. Good to be with you.
The International Energy Agency said if the world were to have any chance of holding global warming to 1.5 degrees, the funding of new fossil fuel infrastructure would have to cease this year. So how helpful is Beijing's announcement towards achieving that goal?
It's a big step forward. As always, particularly with China, the devil will be in the detail, particularly as to how robust this is. And as your intro also pointed to, I mean, the big question now is also what China will be able to do at home. But to put it in perspective, with effectively a single sentence in his speech to the General Assembly, Xi Jinping has effectively ground to a halt around $50 billion and around 40 planned coal plant power projects around the world through the Belt and Road Initiative. And that's, you know, that is seismic, particularly given the lifespan of a lot of these coal plants once constructed.
What does this signal to the rest of the world? Is this the end of coal?
I think it's a further ringing of the death knell for coal, that's for sure, as his statement was last year in terms of pledging to be carbon neutral by 2060. This will also help a lot of countries through the Belt and Road, frankly, themselves begin the process of weaning off their reliance on coal-fired power. Again, though, the big question is what will China do at home? And the reason for that is China is a huge consumer of coal domestically. 20% of all the world's emissions come from China's domestic consumption of coal alone. So what they do at home, and particularly what they do at home in the next decade, really matters. And while they might be making this announcement with respect to their investments and finance overseas, we're actually seeing the opposite trajectory domestically at the moment, where there is still coal plant construction going on.
Since 2000, China's poured more than $50 billion into coal projects across Asia and Southern Africa as part of the Belt and Road Initiative. How has this type of financing worked? How involved is Beijing?
Well, interestingly enough, I mean, it's even more far-flung than that. I mean, even projects in Eastern Europe through the Belt and Road have received this kind of financing. Look, it's complicated, and there are different ways in which it's manifest. Some of it is obviously public and development finance. Some of it purely goes just to Chinese labour, which is actually a really important caveat to keep an eye on in terms of how this announcement actually bears weight in the coming period, because will it extend, for example, to the even larger number of projects that benefit from that Chinese labour as well? But it's often that complicated mix. And the words that Xi Jinping used, which again will be important, but hopefully not the whole story, was that China will simply hold the construction rather than necessarily the finance of these plants. So there is at least a hope that that will be quite a broad-based measure.
China's president this week said they'll step up support for other developing countries in progressing green and low carbon energy. Is that a way of ensuring Chinese labour that was used in building coal plants remains employed in other projects?
Well, hopefully not. And as I say, I mean, that is a really important caveat that I think people need to keep an eye on in terms of how this announcement actually manifests in the years ahead. And if you look at the projects around the world where China has provided finance for the construction of coal plants, that's large. But if you look at the number of coal plants that have benefited from Chinese labour, that's astronomical. So the labour question is really important here.
Also today, Boris Johnson urged the world to grow up and come of age at the upcoming Glasgow Climate Summit, COP26. How does Australia look going into the summit?
I think like China, interestingly enough, Australia has to bring something more to the table. The big focus at COP26, and which, frankly, China's announcement doesn't speak to at all, is what countries are prepared to do at home, and particularly what they're prepared to do at home in the next 10 years through to 2030. Now, most major emitters around the world, including obviously the United States, but also the UK and others, have responded to that call and increased the targets that they originally set in the lead up to Paris back in 2015 or even earlier. Australia is obviously still yet to do that. On the 31st of December last year, while most people were firing up their barbecues, the government sent a note to the United Nations that indicated it didn't intend to update its target. Whether that geopolitical positioning will now change vis-a-vis the Biden administration coming into office, other major emitters like Japan and Canada doing an about-face when they previously too held the same position, remains to be seen. But that is the key way that Australia's sort of offer will be received at COP26, will be what they're prepared to do on 2030, and not, frankly, necessarily what they are prepared to do in terms of net zero by 2050. That would obviously be a good and important signal that they formally adopt a net zero position, but COP26 is all about 2030.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thank you so much.
And that's Tom Woodruff, who's a fellow at the Asia Society Policy Institute. This is RN Drive.